it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
All right. Once again, we are here on Advantage Connors, a little jet lagged edition, coming to you as always, your host, Brett Connors, up the coast in Santa Barbara. Jimmy, how's it going? I know you had a long flight. You've had a long trip. Tell us about it. How you feeling?
I'm good, but the jet lag is, I don't take it like I used to. Going from London to Tokyo to Buenos Aires to New York and traveling around when I was younger was like nothing. But now I take a flight from Palm Beach back to L.A. and then drive up to Santa Barbara and I'm exhausted. So I'm trying to get acclimated again. I've had a busy day trying to do a few things, getting back on the duties around the house and things that I have to do. But yeah, good to talk to you. I haven't talked to you in a while, and I know you've been busy, and good to be on the podcast with you again.
Yep. Talk to us. Let us know how the golf tournament went. Last time we talked to you, you were getting ready to play in the event down in Florida with Schnittles. How'd it go?
Well, it didn't go quite as we expected, but we played against a lot of these young guys who just absolutely blister the ball. And I'm an old guy, Brett. I'm lucky to get 230 or 235 out of my drives, and these kids are hitting the ball 60, 70 yards past me, and I'm hitting a hybrid into a lot of these par fours, and they're hitting, eight or nine irons, and it's tough to compete. But on the other hand, that's who I want to play against because they're going to make me better. To come back here now and to play with my buddies back in Santa Barbara and bring that experience back here is only going to make me, understand that, what I have to work on, what I have to get better at. But, man, it was fun down there. It was a great weekend. And, I love being with my friend David Schneider and hanging with him and playing golf with him. And, we've been friends. I know we've talked about it a lot. And David and his family, we've been friends since we've been kids. And to still hang and to have a good time, not only on the tennis court, but also on the golf course is pretty special.
Nice. That sounds fun. You got to see OBS a little bit too.
And by the way, just to say how we finished, I think we finished out of six. I think we finished fifth.
Out of how many?
Out of six in our group, we finished down fifth. But that's okay. We were in there. We were grinding. I mean, we weren't giving it to them. They had to beat us. And the first day was a rough day, but the second day, we had a much better day, and we ran into a couple good groups. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. Playing with some of those young guys, and I had to basically ask him, Brad. I said, what do you do for work? I said, if you're playing golf like this, what's your job? And I thought golf was their job, and it was fun. We had a lot of good guys in the group, some good conversation, and a lot of fun. So yeah, it was a great weekend, really good weekend.
Nice. Sounds like fun. I'll have to get my sticks and come down there with you one of these days and play golf and catch up and get some guys down there on the podcast from Florida.
Yeah, me and Dave, we need a little length. So we can use your length. Well,
doesn't always go straight.
Ball.
Okay. Well, it sounds fun. I'm glad you got to see him and play in that, and Aubrey, and spend time with her, and shout out Obbs. Hope she's doing well. I don't want to keep you long, but I thought this, since we just came off the Australian Open and it's a lot of the smaller events now before we get to Indian Wells in a few weeks, I thought it's a good opportunity to go into the mailbag. I put hey, leave us your questions, topics on your Facebook page, and you guys showed out over 220 questions in less than 24 hours.
Nice.
So we thank you. And I went through before the show and I picked a bunch that seemed to be on there a lot. So topics that you guys want to hear about, and then some of the fun outside the box ones, since we don't just always want tennis here on the pod. So we're happy to get it. So you ready for some questions?
I'm in a talkative mood.
Perfect.
Let her rip.
We'll start.
Give me some good ones.
We'll ease you into it. We'll start with some fun. Richard Large asks, hey, Jimmy, wanted to know if you ever had any UFO experiences.
I'm a fan. I'm into it. I think they're for real. And, you know, I want to make this quick. Back in the 90s, I started a senior tour and I was doing so much traveling. I was fortunate enough, and you know, Bretter, I had my own airplane, and the call sign on my plane was NNS. So in tennis was my call sign. Mm-hmm. And we had, my pilots were beyond great. They were like a member of our family and treated you and your sister and your mom as such. And I often asked them, I said, if you ever see anything, you know, up here as we're flying, because my favorite was to fly at night. And no matter where I went, I wanted to fly because I wanted the moon. And you know, I didn't want to waste any time during the day. And our captain, Byron, who was so great to us all and took such good care of the plane, finally took me aside, because every time I'd get on the plane, I'd say, Byron, you got to tell me, have you ever seen anything? Do you see anything? Will you, you know, wake me up, because, mm-hmm. you know, I want to know what's going on. He said, I will not do that. I will not tell you. I will not say a word, because the paperwork that you have to fill out going through all that is not worth it. So
that's funny.
But he was amazing. And you know, going back, I don't know, I watch Ancient Aliens and I watch a lot of that. And, you know, going back and seeing a lot of things over history that have happened with, you know, Stonehenge and, you know, the pyramids and a lot of pyramids in South America that match up with the pyramids in Egypt and the pyramids here. You know, it's hard for me to think, and now everybody out there may think, yeah, this guy's a wacky son of a bitch. And yeah, I probably am. But I it's hard for me to believe that a lot of things that happened like that didn't have help. And now where that came from, I don't know. I don't know. But I have an open mind, and I'm not saying that, well, it's not this, it's not that, it is this, it is that. I have mm-hmm. an open mind for, you know, for all discussions, and you know, show me some proof. And if that is a possibility, and if it's not, show me some proof that it's not. But so far, there's so many questions that are out there, that the theories that are out there mm-hmm. are pretty amazing. And you know, so you know, until I know one way or the other, I want to have an open mind and continue to you know, to look into it and to try to, you know, listen and learn as much as I can. So yeah,
okay.
There you go.
All right.
And yes, I am a wacky son of a bitch. There you
that's,
go.
That's a good thing. That's an understatement. I hope they're real. I mean, I hope that
we're me too.
In the universe. I hope there's something else out there. Then there's the conspiratorial guy inside me, you know, Mr. Conspiracy Theorist here, who thinks that I think they might be from us. It's the Earth. It's on Earth. I think it's some sort of tech. Because if you look at certain technologies like car with gas and certain airplanes, we're still flying in you know, 727s that are 30 years old. But all the other technology with computers and phones and all the GPS and all this other stuff is advancing at light speed. And so it seems like on certain things, the government or whatever you want to call it, the powers that be have maybe stunted the progress on certain things. And then that will give them such an edge with the hidden tech. But then what you're saying with the ancient aliens is, well, maybe we got that tech from somebody, right? Like
right.
maybe they brought it down, gave it to us, and then now we're reverse engineering it or something like that. It has been interesting the last couple of years how, like, it used to be you were a cuckoo if you talked about it. And now it's become a lot more mainstream. It's acceptable. They're having hearings on Capitol Hill about it and Congress people talking and asking questions. So it's definitely more in the public eye, and I'm for it. I like more of it too, like you.
Yeah, I'm with you. No matter what you think or what anybody says, there's a lot of theories that they're actually walking among us now. You never know who you're walking next to. Watch out.
Might have been on the plane next to you today.
Yeah. Well, which is kind of fun. But, people are going to listen and say, Jesus, this guy's got, he's lost his mind. He hit too many tennis balls. I probably did. But I'd rather have an open mind towards the theory than not. It just makes my days better. So there you go. Take it or leave it.
I'm taking it. All right. Moving on. Next one. Rodney Johnson. Love you guys on the podcast. Jimmy, you've been very fortunate to meet some amazing celebrities in your life. Who was the one celebrity that made you the most nervous to meet?
Oh, mm-hmm. Boy.
That's a good one, huh?
That is a good one. I've been very lucky. And, because I come from the 60s and the 70s where going back and, as I say many times, I'm old school. So, having an opportunity to meet Frank Sinatra or Elizabeth Taylor or Joe Montana or Wayne Gretzky or Muhammad Ali, in sports and in music.
I got a question. This one always stands out to me. When you were doing your matches in Vegas, you always told me the story about Joe Louis had been hired. Yeah. Greeter.
Right.
Like one of the greatest athletes of all time hired as a greeter at Caesar's Palace. And if you know the story of Joe Louis, he had some, tough road along the way after his success and with IRS and all that shit. But I mean, to me, he was one of the greats ever. Did you get nervous meeting him?
No. You know what was interesting about that, Brad? And I'm glad you brought that up because when I played Rod Laver in a challenge match at Caesars and Mr. Louis was a greeter there. And I mean, his popularity and his fame and his reputation. And after the match, there was after I played Laver, which by the way, I won, we go to this party and Mr. Louis was there. And my grandfather, your great grandfather, who we called Pop, was a boxer. He had the opportunity to spar with Mr. Louis when he was passing through, St. Louis or, Pop also lived in Kentucky. And so I was able to take up to Mr. Louis and say, Mr. Louis, this is my grandfather. He was a boxer I'll never forget it. He says, Joe Louis looked at him. He says, I'm sure I knocked you out, and Pop goes, I don't know about that, but he did,
it knocked him out, right?
Yeah. But it was amazing to have been able to take, my grandpa who trained me and trained me like a boxer, mm-hmm. And gave me that, that kind of, education on how to get in good shape and what it took and kind of that fighting spirit and tennis was always boxing at 90 paces. And to have been able to introduce him to Joe Louis was, oh my God, was amazing. And Caesar's Palace back in the day, had so many great, activities and special events and fights and tennis
people
events.
Hanging around.
Yeah. The tennis events that I had, Brett, back then was in the early 70s in Hollywood and was very tennis oriented. They loved tennis a lot of the big stars love being not only played it, but love being a part of it and playing in the pro-ams and things. And yeah, it was, and I'm just going to say one other thing that, I had an entree because I was, close to Pancho Segura, who was the pro to the stars. The people that he taught and, people that would come to the Beverly Hills Tennis Club and take lessons from him and, be sitting around having lunch. And, I was, lucky to be able to meet a lot of those people. And, it was a pretty special time. Yeah, I was pretty lucky. Very, nice. I had a very, very lucky childhood. Once I left East St. Louis, and not that was bad, but at 15, it was time to move on.
Right. Yeah, I'm a big Joe Louis fan. If you've seen the documentary that was, I think, came out on HBO years ago, it's a sad tale of his life, and you know, he seemed like a really interesting dude, and must have been pretty cool to meet him and get to talk to him a little bit, especially with Pop.
Yeah.
All right, moving on. How you're going to like this name. Jimbo Hobson says, do you remember a match with Michael Steek in Memphis? I brought a busload of kids from Hot Springs over there, and you were the feature, and Steek was number one in the world. You were getting torched, and you were clowning around, giving the racket to the ball kids, trying to hit a serve. All of a sudden, you hit a few amazing shots. Steek got mad about a call. You got the sold-out crowd in a frenzy and blew Steek's mind. You ended up coming back and winning the match. We got home at 2:30 in the morning. You remember that?
I think I kept people up way too long on too many matches. But some matches, you know, playing against, when he's number one in the world, playing against a guy like Michael Steek or Borg or McEnroe or Becker or Sampras or, you know, whoever at the time was always special. You know, Steek came up, and I was kind of getting older at that time, and you know, to be able to, you know, go out and give him a match and kind of, you know, get stuck into it like that. But you know, I often said, Brett, that you know, the crowds have won me a lot more matches than maybe I should have. But that was, you know, for me to bring the crowd down and to be a part of what I did and to get involved like that, that was my fun. You know, mm-hmm. Not only was the tennis my fun, but the crowd was, you know, was amazing. You know, and they came. You know, I'll never forget. I did an event with five or six other athletes, and Wayne Gretzky was one of them. And I'll never forget Wayne. He was up walking, and he stopped behind me, and he says, "There's two things. There's two people here." And he put in, and he was standing behind me, and he says, "Jimmy and me that understood that this is entertainment, and to give the fans, you know, an opportunity to be a part of what we were doing, and to bring them down and to feel like they were an influence in us winning." Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget that. And he was right, because that's what sports are. You know, people pay their hard-earned money to come and watch us play, and they don't want to walk out of there disappointed. They want to walk out of there saying, that's the best time I ever had. I want to go back again. And by the way, Joe and Sue and Jack and Ann, you're going with me tomorrow, because did you see Gretzky score that goal? Oh, my God, that was amazing. And did you see that backhand that Connors hit up the line? Yeah, could you believe it? I'll never. If we see that tomorrow, you'll love it. And he was right. And that's that, you know, why do you think, you know, tennis, you know, in the 70s and 80s grew, and hockey is growing to where it is now. And, you know, it's entertainment but it's also about winning and making money now too. So, you know, there's a lot of other things that enter into it, but, I'll never forget him saying that. And I always appreciated that.
Yep. I mean, it always makes me think you're the one who says that all it takes is, you know, one call, one shot, one thing from the crowd to get you going and turn the match around. And this seems like a perfect example of that. Also, I think that you were smart, and you were able to use the crowd as almost like a release valve for like the tension, you know, where I think a lot of other players, if they broke concentration and started talking to the crowd or handing the racket or sitting line judge's seat, you know, it might break their concentration and they might lose focus and start to lose. But with you, it was almost like there'd be these tension moments. You'd go back, make a comment, grab someone's popcorn, take a bite, you know, and it would like release a little bit of the pressure almost, that people would laugh, you'd smile, and then you'd settle back in, get your focus, and then, you know, be able to play. But like, people are like that.
No, but I was good. I was good at releasing, but I was also getting right back into the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the key, because you know my very good friend Ilie Nastasi, you know, that was what he could not do. You know, he was very good at releasing the tension, but he could never get back into the moment. It always took him a while, a game or two, and by that time the set could be over. Right. But I was good at collecting myself and getting back into what was important, and that was trying to win the point. But you're right. I was good at concentrating, but I wasn't good at concentrating for 5 hours. Yeah. I was good at concentrating when it meant something, which is when the ball was in play and it mattered. And I was lucky that way, and I think that came a lot from the way I used to practice from a very young age, that that every second counted, every minute counted, and that 45 minutes of doing it the right way was enough. I didn't have to stay around for 4 hours and to get what I was looking for out of it, that I was able to put all of that energy into that time and then was able to do other things also. So I was lucky in that way, very lucky. Yep.
And just to put in perspective, Stieg won Wimbledon in 91, played into the mid-late 90s, won a World Tour Finals in 93. And it just shows you how long of a career you had. You started in the early 70s and you're still beating guys who were ranked number one at the tournament, in the early whatever it was, 90s, whenever that match took place. And it sounds like it was a pretty fun story, pretty fun match to be at.
I'm going to say it, I've said it many times, Bretter, and I know I've talked to you about it, on the podcast and off. I had a good run.
Yeah.
And a run that allowed me to be at the top for 99.9% of the time. Mm-hmm. But that was my work ethic. Even though I was getting older, I knew that I had to, put more time in and train harder, and because I was playing against guys younger, but I also understood that I couldn't do it so much that I would hurt myself. So that I wouldn't be ready to play. So, there's such a fine line, when you do get older, whether it's, Nadal or Federer or Pancho Gonzalez, who played into his, well into his 40s, or me, you got to figure that out on your own, just what you can do so that when the matches come around, you're ready to go. As opposed to when the matches come around, you're going, holy shit, my arm hurts, my back hurts, my leg, I train too much. It's a fine line. So that's up to the individual.
Yep. All right. Let's get through some more questions here. This is a quick one, I think. It looks like it's from a Trojan fan. Ray Danigan's got a picture wearing Trojan gear, but he's asking a UCLA-based question. I remember Spencer Segura had a green Porsche 914 ? Was it freshman year at Westwood, or was that yours? And did you watch any other sports when you were at UCLA?
That was mine. I had a 911 Targa green.
So it was a 911.
It was a 911. Yes, I did watch sports. I went mostly to the basketball because it was at the Pauley Pavilion, which was right on the campus of UCLA, and I lived very close to that. The football, I liked the football. I go to a lot of the practices, but as far as going down, to watch and play, Not often, but the basketball, I was a big fan of, very big fan of the basketball. And a lot of the guys I had classes with, and it was fun not only hanging in class with them, but also watching them perform. And, and back then, UCLA was so dominant in basketball that, it never hurts to go and watch a winner. So that was pretty fun.
Well, and you were homies with Bill Walton. I know you always said that he had a little patch of grass on the UCLA campus that he would...
that was my patch. He actually
that was
went
your
to
patch.
Class.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he actually went to class. we had some classes together, and for me, I knew I wasn't a student. It's no secret. And even though I loved that year at college, in UCLA, the coach Glenn Bassett was an amazing coach, and they put up with me for that year, but my focus was on tennis, and I knew my the direction I was going to go. And I've often said that and your grandmother, my mom, said that she wanted me to get an education. I happened to hit my stride when I was 19 and start playing some pretty darn good tennis and started to win some matches and some tournaments over some top players. And I said, it's time for me to go and make my way. And also I'm going to go back to, to Lloyd Bridges, who was a very good friend of the family. You know, he told me, he says, Jimmy, you got to strike while the iron's hot. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't know how long it's going to be hot. So you got to strike. And so your grandmother said to me, she goes, okay, she goes, I'll give you 5 years. And she goes, but you got to promise me if in 5 years that things don't work out for you and it does, and you don't make it, that you go back to school. I said, yeah, that's a deal. And I would have done anything to make it happen so I wouldn't have to go back to school. You know, that was just my attitude. That was just the way I looked at it. Looking back, it was a great time, but school wasn't for me, and it's not for everybody, but I was lucky. It worked out for me.
Yeah. Sounds like you still had a little bit of fun the 1 year and a half that you were there. It doesn't sound
it
like
it was
the worst
beyond place. Fun, Brad. Beyond
doesn't
fun.
Sound like the yeah. worst place to have hung out.
No, I mean, you know, hanging out in Westwood and in Westwood Village in LA and going to UCLA and meeting.
Especially at that time. Because UCLA was so good at basketball and all these different sports, you know.
Right. You know, and the athletes who went there and you know, forget that. I mean, I made a lot of friends who weren't athletes there and you know, became, you know, and got to know them quite well. And, you know, Jeff Austin, Tracy Austin's brother was on the team and, you know, was my good friend. And, you know, we played doubles together and, you know, we're still friends to this day, even though, you know, we have different lives and, you know, we've kind of gone in different directions. But, you know, if I would see him tomorrow, we'd pick up where we left off, you know, and that's a friend, you know, that, so, I mean, the days of back then were pretty special for me, you know, because I came from a small town in Illinois. I never thought I'd ever end up in Beverly Hills or Westwood Village or going to UCLA, it was a dream of mine. And, you know, for that to have come true was pretty amazing.
Yep. Definitely was. All right. Moving on. We got a lot of good questions tonight. We got two current tennis questions that I want to get your take on, and then we'll get back into some other ones from the Facebook page. Here's one that I feel like we can definitely talk on. Did you see the news? Holger Rune, who we had on pretty much just about two and a half months ago on the podcast, was a great guest. Mm-hmm. He came on. One of the topics we talked about was his recent partnership with Boris Becker, former number one Grand Slam champion. And it came out this week that they have decided to stop working together and part ways. Rune had also hired Severin Lufti after we had our podcast. That's why we didn't talk about it, but who used to travel and work a lot with Federer. But was in a ton of, you know, in his box for a ton of Grand Slam titles. So he's gone from having both those guys to neither guy. And a lot of people are asking kind of the similar question. A lot of people are pointing to his mother, Anika, who came on the pod helped us arrange the pod and was very kind to us and seemed like a great person. But I thought it would be good to ask you because of, you know, Grandma Glow taught you, managed you, represented you, was there for a lot of your career and a big part of it. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on, you know, on the situation, on him stopping working and then people, you know, maybe getting in his head. Is she too much a part of his tennis life? Is there room for a parent to be a part of it? What's your take on it all?
You said it all, son. I mean, when Boris started working with him, you know, we thought that was a good thing, you mm-hmm. know, but the demands that would have been put on somebody like Becker. I mean, that's not just a hit and miss. You know, I know when I was with Andy Roddick, I mean, I was on the road a lot, you know, going to, you know, different tournaments and being gone for four and five and six weeks in a row and going to the Grand Slams and, you know, and all that. So it's a commitment. If you're not willing to make that commitment and you have other things going, and I'm sure Boris does, yeah, I mean, it's a very difficult decision on both because I'm sure that Rune saw, you know, what Boris could bring to the table and how he could help improving. But, you know, on the other hand, he's got to understand that, you know, a guy Becker's age has also a life. And unless you're willing to put everything into not only being a great player on your own, but helping to make him a great player, it's a tough commitment. Now, going back to the mom, listen, nobody knows more about Rune than his mom. You know, just like, you know, your grandma knew about me and my tennis and who to turn me over to when she turned me to Pancho Segura and what that meant, and, you know, and what her part would be after that. And was she willing to pull back a little bit and understand that, that, you know, what he could give me and how he could make me a better player. And, you know, so there's a lot that goes into behind the scenes too, you know, and, even though your grandmother took care of my business, she was very, very lenient on the tennis and allowed me to, you know, to work with Pancho and to, you know, to find out what he could give me, not only with my tennis, but also, you know, for the men's game, as opposed to the way your grandmother taught me and how that would improve my game. And she appreciated all that. I guess the best way for me to say it is, my mom, your grandma, wasn't afraid to let go to a certain point, right. You know, and, you know, but I was also getting older at that time also, you know, and kind of going into my own, you know, I started working with Pancho at 15, 16 years old. And all of a sudden I was 19, 20, 21 and starting to win and, you know, make my name for myself, you know, so, and Runa is in that position himself right now. So it's going to be interesting to see how that works out and who comes and is able to stick in there, because, you know, you're not only dealing with the player himself, but you're also dealing, you know, with the force of what got him there, which is his mom.
Right.
And right. You know, and it's not the control that she has, but it's just, you know, everything that she has put in it to get him to that point is, you know, she's looking to go beyond that. And unless it's going to work in his favor, then she should step in, because, you know, that's the way, you know, your grandma stepped in with me. It's going to be interesting to see what happens and who comes in next and, you know, and where he goes from here. But, you know, he's young, he's good, he's big, he's strong and he's got game. So you know, like I said, you know, every time we talk about him, I'm watching him.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting because it's he's still young. Like he's 20, you know, and it's like people are, hey, he needs to drop his mom or she needs to not be so involved and blah, 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 what everyone says on Twitter. But it's like, hey, he's only 20. It's not like, you know, he's 25 and she's still there and she's still doing all of this. You know, you can look at somebody like Tsitsipas is older. His dad's all over. He's there all the time, you know, and Tsitsipas is 24 or whatever he is, 25 now. Or even somebody like Caroline Wozniacki, who, you know, recently came back at the US Open last year and is trying to make a comeback. Her dad is still there all the time and she's in her 30s.
Yeah, you know, there's a very fine line, son.
No, you understand. I'm saying there's a balance, you know, because like the parent who grinded and brought them up and gave them everything and taught them, and, you know, no one's going to trust each other more than you and your mom and that bond you have. It's not like you're ever just going to like go, okay, later, and like completely go hands off.
Right.
You know, especially to people who you just might have met or you don't know that well, or who, you know, do you trust them and all this stuff. But then also there has to be that natural like space you give someone who's becoming their own person and an adult and making their way and their name and their career and all that stuff. So I think it's an interesting story to follow. I think you're right. I think Boris might, you know, maybe the time he was asking from Boris was maybe too much. And like you said, Boris has a lot of other obligations in his life. Maybe he wasn't able to do it. But yeah, I'm interested to see, because Holger, I think he needs to kind of figure it out. And like kind of get some stability, you know, and just have whatever he's going to have around him for a little while, you know, let him get used to the voices and used to whatever they're telling him and try and implement it and work on that stuff. And then you can, you know, look back on it in a year and say, hey, it was a good, was it bad? Should we keep going? But to only do a month or two, it's hard to get any feel, because I mean, how many matches did you play with since we had him on? Like less than 10, probably. So,
well, yeah, I mean, it's you know, like I said, it's a fine line. It comes down to all being a matter of trust. And I keep going back to that, because I knew that what your grandmother and your great grandmother gave me, that whatever they told me, I trusted them, that they were only going to try to make me a better player and to be better at what I was trying to do. And then when they turned, you know, when I went over to Pancho and they turned me over to Pancho, and I trusted him. So it was all in that he was going to give me what I needed for a man's game to play against men to be the best, you know. So the trust that I had in them was that, you know, whatever you tell me, I'm going to do. So, you know, but that word trust is brutal, you know, because because I want to go back and say, because, you know, you're going to trust a lot of people that are going to, you know, give you the high hard one, you know, so if you're not careful. But, you know, and that's kind of, you know, the protection, you know, that his mom probably has. You know, I'm not digging. I'm no psychologist or psychiatrist. I'm not digging into the mind, but I understand, you know, that, you know, how that works, you know, what it takes, you know, to get on board and to, you know, really put your heart and soul into someone, you know, like Boris mm-hmm. had to do for him. And to give him everything. And then I understand from, you know, from Runa's part that, you know, how was he going to accept that? You know, you're kind of fighting two negatives. Sometimes, you know, have to make a positive. You know, that's, you know, it's tough to do. But I do understand this. I understand the importance of guys from the past and their knowledge and their experience and their expertise of being what they have become and how that can help guys today. And if a lot of guys don't believe that, they're missing out. Right. They're missing out because, you know, you can never doubt the fact that somebody who has been there and done that and knows what it takes to win from bad positions and to lose from good positions and to grind it out and what that means, you know, to the experience of the young player. So, you know, I thought that he would do something good for him. I didn't think it. I thought it would last a lot longer than it did. But hey, you know, maybe he'll pick up somebody else. You don't know.
Yeah.
So
I think it's one of those things where he's trying different things maybe and trying to figure it out. And then, you know, because he had that success a year and a half ago and, you know, he jumped up so high that our expectations are, and now we see Sinner win a slam and Alcaraz has won slams and everyone throws his name in with them. And, you know, I just think he's going about it and he'll figure it out. I think he just needs some stability and to find someone he's comfortable with and then stay with them for a while and just, you know, get to work with them and try and see what they can do.
Listen, I'm rooting for him.
You know, definitely.
I enjoyed our conversation when he came on the podcast. He, you know, he was very engaging and easy to talk to, and you know, seemed to, you know, talk honestly from the heart, and I like that. Yeah, you know, mm-hmm. So I'm rooting for him, and you know, hope that, you know, he jumps into that group of young Grand Slam winners over the course of this year. And that would be great with Alcaraz and Sinner and Djokovic and Runa and you know, a few guys, you know, jumping in like that. That would be great. Be great for tennis.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely rooting for him. And we'll keep an eye on it and see, you know, if he hires somebody or if he just tries to, you know, go with the people he's got now for a while. Your pet's a member of the family. Don't feed them like they're in the doghouse. Give them Nom Nom. Nom Nom delivers freshly made dog food with every portion personalized to your dog's needs, so you can bring out their best. Nom Nom's made with real wholesome ingredients which you can see and recognize, without any additives or fillers that contribute to bloating and low energy. That's because Nom Nom uses the latest science and insights to make real, good food for dogs. Their nutrient-packed recipes are designed by board-certified veterinary nutritionists, freshly made and shipped free. That's free to your door. Nom Nom already delivered over 40 million meals to good dogs like yours, inspiring millions of clean bowls and tail wags. Our mascot here on Advantage Connors is Isabella the Mini Golden Doodle. We love her so much. She's 5 years old, and recently we switched her to Nom Nom. Her favorite recipe is the chicken one. Cuisine, it's got chicken, sweet potatoes, squash, and spinach. She loves it. It comes in these pre-portioned packages that are made perfect for the dog's weight and health. And why don't we just let Isabella tell us how she likes it? Plus, Nom Nom comes with a money-back guarantee. If your dog's tail isn't wagging within 30 days, Nom Nom will refund your order. No fillers, no nonsense, just Nom Nom. And this is the best part, guys. Go right now for 50% off your no-risk, two-week trial at trynom.com/Connors. Spelled trynom.com/Connors. For 50% off. Trynom.com/Connors. Go right now for your 50% off, no risk, 2 week trial at trynom.com/Connors. That sounds like a pretty good song. Trynom.com/Connors. Spelled trynom.com/Connors for 50% off. All right, let's get back to the show.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
All right, another quick tennis story. We don't have to talk long about it, but it kind of got my attention. It was so interesting. Dominic Thiem, you know, former, I think got to two in the world. I'm not sure if he got to one, but former Grand Slam champion, 2020 US Open, good player for a really long time, had some injuries, had the wrist injury, which is the one that kept him out for a while, but he's been back now for a couple years. And there was an article that came out, had some quotes. I just wanted to get your take and see what you thought. He says, I've been back for 2 years since the injury. I finished 2022 at 100 or so, and last year at 98. Should I end the year at 100 again, meaning this year? You have to think about whether or not the whole thing is still worth it. And I just, that kind of shook me a little bit because he's only 30. But then right. Like when you think about it, it's kind of true. He feels like he's kind of been like trying to run in quicksand these last couple of years where like he gets a little, you know, wins a match or two, has a good week, and then, you know, has a bad run for a few weeks. And, you know, like he can't get any progress. He's just kind of hovering at, you know, right around 100. And then with the cost of having a team and the traveling and all the stuff that goes into it, that's not part of team sports. When you're an individual, you got to pay for a lot of your own stuff. It started me thinking, like, is it really worth it? You know, like all the money he puts into it. And if he just ends up at 100, he must not be making tons of profit. You know, like what happens with that? Like when you have an injury, and it's so weird because it seems like he's back physically, but to see him not to be able to turn it on and get back to the, you know, huge one-handed backhands and fast movement, huge forehands and, you know, stuff that he's known for. It's weird and it's kind of sad in a way because I like Thiem a lot and I miss him being a part of the conversation more.
Right. I got to go back and I say, you know, financially, I wonder if he has any endorsements and so forth like that, racket, shoes, clothes, you know, which would, you know, kind of keep him out there and, you know, the amount of money that's in the game. And he also has a name, mm-hmm. you know, still, even though he has been hurt, he still has his name and his reputation. Being 30, yes, it is worth it, you know, because he still has some time if he's willing to pay the price. And you know what the price is, don't you? Work.
Don't think he's scared of that. I feel like
you go work hard and you continue and you train and you try to get that confidence because winning is all about confidence. You know, if he wins a few matches and he'll get on a roll. Sometimes you just got to be a little patient because I know what it's like coming back from it, you know, from an injury. You know, you got to suck up a few losses. And, you know, but 2 years is, you know, is a difficult stint. I get it. But if you continue the grind, because I always go back to the what if, Bretter, don't go away and think that, well, what if I'd have played another year? Would I have come back? Do it. Do it now because, you know, then if you stop, you can say, I gave it everything that I could, you know, to try to get back and to be the best that I could be. And I have no regrets. But, mm-hmm. you know, don't think that, you know, I mean, there's a lot of good young players out there. Of course there are, you know, but I'm still going back to his reputation and what he's done in the past and the success that he's had and his name value, mm-hmm. you know, so, you know, if that was me and I know he's not me, but I'm just saying, if that was me, I would say I'm 30 years old in comparison. Look at Nadal, look at Djokovic, look at Federer, you know, look at some of these guys who are playing well into their 30s, into their mid to late 30s, and what they've been able to accomplish. why wouldn't you give yourself a chance to stay out there and you know, try to grind it out to get back to where you were? Maybe you don't, but leaving at number 100 is you know, and he said it, is it worth it? I wouldn't want to leave at number 100. I think, you know, that's why I say go and do what it takes to give yourself an opportunity to work your way up the ladder, because you've got room now.
Yeah.
You know, if he was five, if he was number five, I'm saying, whoo, shit, you know, your room is, you know, is getting pretty crowded. There's, you know, not much room to go, but he's right. Number 100.
Right.
And he's got a lot of opportunity,
yeah,
you know, to make five, a splash.
Yeah. And if he's five, he's definitely not going anywhere. I just, it seems like though today where he just needs like one good result. He almost needs to jump up and like do really well at like a Masters 1000, or jump up and make a quarter or semi at a slam, or
he needs to beat a big player.
Yeah. He needs to, and just get out of having to play tough guys in these first, second rounds too.
Exactly.
Where it's one of the things where you can never get traction sometimes because he's, you know, playing, you know, qualifying some events, or, you know, having to, you know, play somebody good in his first or second match. I hope he comes back. I mean, I hope he has a good year. Every time we do one of his matches, I'm rooting for him just because he seems like a nice kid, and it's a bummer when like your body just gives out on you. It reminds you of Delpo a little. Obviously, yeah, Delpo was able to come back.
Listen, injuries are brutal. You know, especially if they take you out for that amount of time.
When the wrist, you know the wrist.
Yep, I know the wrist. And you know, to come back, you know, you've got to get the confidence in that whatever that is, the wrist or whatever, is going to hold up under all that pressure of hitting, you know, that hard for that long, for that amount of time, not only in one match, but over the course of a week or a month or a year. It's a more of a mental thing, I would think. You know, that's what it was when I came back from my wrist surgery. It was more mental, you know. Oh my God, is that going to hurt? You know, is it not going to hurt? Or, you know, is it going to hold up?
Trust it. Like, do you trust it 100% kind of thing?
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly.
All right. Well, hopefully he comes back. We can check in on him throughout the year. Clay court season is just a month and a half or 2 months away. So he'll be looking forward to that. Here's a couple quick questions for you. Gerardo Hernandez said, Jimmy, why did you wear a sock on your arm sometimes, and why only on one arm and not both?
Well, it was mostly just to keep my arm warm because, you know, I was left-handed, so I wore it mostly on my left side. For my serve and I had a two-handed backhand, and that was really the extent of what my right arm was doing. But it was mostly just to keep it warm, and also I didn't have tennis elbow, but I did have elbow problems, you know, sometimes along the way, and just to, you know, keep it warm, you know, over the course of the time was good. So, yeah. I mean, it wasn't a constant thing, but, you know, on occasion it worked for me.
Yeah. And then it seems to be a little bit, you know, ahead of the time. Now they have compression socks, you know, people wear them on their calf or their thigh or their whole leg or their whole arm or shoulder. So it probably didn't compress much, but it kept your arm warm, which was good.
Yeah.
All right, let's see. What else do we got here? We got some good... This guy says, Lauren Casper, what's the best part of being Jimmy Connors?
Living life. Yeah, you know, and I say that with a smile, because I have had a life that, you know, from the very beginning, that I never expected to have. Coming from a small town in Illinois, which was baseball, basketball, you know, we had the St. Louis Cardinals, football and baseball. And then golf and tennis back where I came from wasn't really part of it. You know, if you weren't playing baseball, basketball, or football, then no, that wasn't it. The opportunity that I had and to play tennis and to travel and to see the world and to meet people and to have success at what I was able to accomplish, you know, it's a one in a million story for me. And that's the best part of it. Yeah. I look back, I appreciate every moment of it. I traveled, I saw the world. I met some amazing people. I met a lot of stinkers too. Don't get me wrong, but, overall it's been an amazing ride. I think the best part of it is, you know, what I've ended up with. I've ended up with my son, 45 years old.
Brett, 44. 44.
Well, you're in your 45th year.
All right.
Our daughter, Aubrey, my wife, Patty, 46 years almost. And that, that to me, is what tennis has allowed me to have. I say every year that that your grandmother gave me a life that I never thought I would be a part of, all of us. And, to this day, what she has given, me to be able to play tennis and to be able to have what we have and, the family that we have and everything is beyond special. That's the best part of being me.
Yeah, that's well said. I got a question here from Barbara Whitehead that can piggyback off of what you just said. What's the best non-tennis piece of advice Gloria Grandma Glow ever gave you?
That is a big question. I don't know if I have enough time to answer that.
Okay.
I think the one thing that she always said to me, and it kind of pertained to everything, tennis and just life in general, was that no matter what the outcome is never what you don't want it to be. And by that, that she said that, if I would lose a tennis match, maybe I lost that tennis match, but you can always do something about that. And it was almost the same in life. Your grandma was very good at giving me hints about living life through tennis. And that was kind of the same thing, that everything in life is not always going to go the way you want it. It's just that as long as you understand that and you can try to do something about it, that's the most important thing.
Nice. I like that. All right. Let's, three more questions. You don't have to go.
That might be too deep for me. I might be getting a little too deep.
The jet lag.
The jet lag. Yeah.
All right. We got a question here from a Stephen Elliott. I'm coming out there on March 27th for 8 days. Hopefully you're still around and we can play some golf. You only have to give me 6 aside. It would be great to see you and Brett.
Now, Steve Elliott is our buddy that we played golf with out here, and his nickname is Otto. We have played over the past, 14 years, and he has since moved from here. I think he's back in around New Hampshire area, and if he comes out here and he only wants 6 aside, tell him I'm game for that. So
he must be playing if he's only asking for 6.
He's a buddy, and I look forward to seeing him. He's we've always had a great time playing, and he's with all the guys out here, so look forward to having him back again.
Yeah, that'll be fun. I'll have to mark that on the calendar and come up and bring the sticks. One more from somebody that we know for a long time, Candace Jordan of Chicago. Love your podcast. Keep up the great work. Chuck asks, it seems to me tennis has never been as popular since the era with you, Mac Borg, and all the great Australians, et cetera. What happened? What affected the popularity of the game most? Most players now you've never heard of as much. Also, do you think being left-handed gave you an advantage? We love you.
Yeah, I love Candace and Chuck. We love you too. We don't get to see you enough and spend enough time with you. We've been friends for so many years. Yeah, I mean, tennis has changed. I mean, back in the 70s, things were just really starting, bigger crowds and television and sponsors and so forth like that. And we've talked about it often, Brett, the guys that were playing at that time, a lot of great Australians, a lot of great Americans, international tennis, from Romania to Argentina to Sweden to Italy to, wherever. But we all had our own identity. And I think that was such a big part of growing the game, that we had our own style of playing on the court. We had our own attitude. We were our own characters. And we had styles that matched, that made for great tennis. And we had styles that didn't, that made for great tennis. It was kind of different, serve and volley against a baseline, or two baseliners playing, two serve and volley players, guys who were looking to move forward, guys who were lucky to stay back. And, so it was, it was a different era of many ways to play the game. to have an imagination, to try to set up a point and to move the ball around and so forth, as opposed to, you know, the game today of just being a power player. So, yeah, I mean, it was great days back then. And, you know, being left-handed, I think back then, there weren't really that many. Roscoe was one, McEnroe was one, I was one, Laver was one. There wasn't really, you know, a lot of, top left-handers. So being left-handed at one time was an advantage. I don't think so much anymore. It's changed. There are more left-handers and the way the guys play. And, you know, a lot of the guys play so deep behind the baseline that, you know, the spin, the left-handed spin is a little bit different, but they play so deep behind the baseline that spin kind of loses its flair, you know, the longer it goes through the air. So it's not as big an advantage anymore. But from Candace and Chuck in Chicago, we're coming back that way. We're going to run into you soon. We've had some great times with them. We love them.
Yep. Candace and Mom were buddies. Candace was a former playmate with Playboy. Shout out to her. One time I used to see her at some of the parties up at the Playboy Mansion, and she couldn't make it one year to the New Year's party. And she writes a column back in Chicago and goes on a lot of the media and stuff covering a lot of the events back there. And so she paid me to write a article and take some pictures at the Playboy Mansion. And Tough work.
I bet that didn't hurt you too much. You didn't mind that, did you?
No, I did not. well, thanks, Candace, for that. I always appreciate you. We miss you and hope to see you soon. One thing on what you were saying about your era, everyone had the different styles, right? And it seems like days with the technology, almost like because of the advancements in technology, it's been positive in these some ways, but then it's taken out the chances for variety in a lot of ways where like you can't come to the net more and like the gripping, you can pass a lot easier and the power and just all that different stuff. The strings are so grippy. It kind of, you know, it makes me think of back in the day when I was watching a show and it was an older show and the people had like flip phones. They would answer their phone and this guy had a flip phone and this guy had an old like a Nokia and this guy had a BlackBerry. And it kind of made me miss the time when we all had different cell phones. You know, pretty much now everyone's got an iPhone or whatever it is, probably 40% of the population. And then the other half have like a Samsung or a Google phone, whatever the other two are that most people have. And it kind of made me think of styles where like now everyone kind of just gets shoved into these two or three phones. And back in the day, everyone kind of had more personality. You could, you know, have the little flip phone on your belt or you had the BlackBerry with the keyboard that no one else had or you know, whatever it was. There was more options to choose from. And
I still have a flip phone, bud.
You do?
I love my flip phone. I still have it. I'm on the different one, here because it has, my email and so forth. But my flip phone is from my family, and when that rings, I know that it's important. So, but it's amazing. The styles, I remember when they had the big phones that they put in your car, in the console, and it shit, that was how great was that, and then all of a sudden you were able to take it out and take it with you. Oh my God, I'm dating myself now, but where we've come and the technology and everything that we're seeing in today's times, and I'm not that guy. I'm not a tech guy. I'm lucky to send a text and use my email a little bit, but
you are not a tech guy.
I call you for help every time. Hey, yeah. I can't know how to do this. Help me out. But, it's amazing, where we're going where I am right now, what I'll see before I go, and then what you'll see even after that is going to be amazing. But here we are.
Yep.
Listen, it's got to be great because, we're doing this podcast and we're 130 miles apart and it sounds like we're right next door to each other. So it's not so bad.
No, not at all. It reminds me, we used to go out to the Alisaw. You'd pick me up from school and we would go golf before it got dark. And we used to have to, we would make our bets in the car and then go play the front and then swing by after 9 and see if there was any score updates and then change, any call Deanie and make any changes. And then once we were able to bring the phone on the course with us, wow, what a door it opened.
Yeah. But that's when our golf game suffered.
Right. We were paying way too much attention to the other thing.
We were on the phone way too much. But we're living in an amazing time. And it's just that, you know, sometimes we don't appreciate what we have and we get a little out of control and so forth. But hey, I like it right here. You know, whatever is on the great beyond, I'm in no hurry to see it. I'm liking it right here. And you know, you said you're bringing your golf clubs up. I'm looking forward to that. That's my view. Is I had a great stay with your sister down in Florida last week, and good time, you know, spending some time with her. And, you know, we're looking forward for you to come up here with your golf clubs. And, you know, living this life is not a bad thing. So.
Nope.
But we'll stay with it.
Yep. One last question, because we have to. It's this Sunday. It's going to be the most watched event maybe all year. We'll see. Super Bowl, Las Vegas, San Francisco, Kansas City. What do you think? What's the pick? Kansas City still, or San Francisco still holding steady at -2. I've seen it for more at other sites, but on my site, it's still -2 and 47.5, which is what we said last week.
Mm-hmm. Well, if I was a betting man, I would say that it's tough to go against Kansas City because of their record the last couple of years, right? I think they've won 2 out of the last 3 years, the Super Bowl. Am I right there?
Yep. They've won twice.
Yeah. And betting against Mahomes, I mean, he just seems to win. You know, he's a scrambler, and he just knows what it's like to win, and his record the last couple of years have proven that. But then again, you know, San Francisco, they've got a new guy back there, and I wonder how this big stage is gonna affect him. But you know, they're pretty powerful on both sides of the ball too. So, you know, 2 points, 47 points. I mean, if and it's in Las Vegas, so you know it's kind of it's a neutral site. I mean, I'm going through all the. I mean, if this was you know a number of years ago, I'd have 8 papers all over the pool table, you know, reading everything. But now, since I don't do that, I'm taking Kansas City.
Okay, Kansas City
and the under.
The under. Okay.
Yeah.
I kind of like that. I feel like they've both been good defenses. San Francisco's got those two defensive ends and. A lot of speed on that side of the ball. But you're right. It's tough to go against Mahomes. Purdy, how's he going to handle it? You know, last year he was hurt when they had a chance to go to Philly and make it to the Super Bowl. Mr. Irrelevant, I think that'd be an awesome story. Last guy picked. So I think, I don't know if, I'll go with the Niners. How about a friendly fiver so we can talk about it next week? I'll take the Niners, you take the Chiefs, and we can have something to text about on Sunday.
That's a deal, and I'm going to place one bet because I know I got a 50-50 chance of winning. I'm going to bet the coin flip.
Perfect. But you still have to lay. You have to lay the vig. You're going to get my 110.
I know. That's painful.
You should bet it with me. I'll give you just straight odds. I'll give you -105. How about that?
Okay, I'm taking heads. I'm taking heads.
Okay, I'll take tails.
Always good being with you, son. Always good. Yep. And I miss seeing you and look forward to you coming up here. And in the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter at Jimmy Connors, and you can follow Brett on Twitter at Brett_Connors. Always follow us, our podcast at Advantage Connors. And yeah,
That's good.
We love hearing your questions. Thanks for sending all that in. And we got a lot more, and maybe next week we can get to a few more and keep everybody interested in what we have to say.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, getting that many responses and great questions from you guys. We had a lot more that we just didn't have time to get to. We could do next week. So love you, Dad. Get some rest. And we'll talk to everybody next week. Peace.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.